describe a direction which is one of, which starts off really with one of the examples and may serve as one of the examples to the previous talk, but just one. And namely, I will be talking about the following situation. We have the convex, we have a symmetric convex body in high dimensional space. And let's say that we are taking the sections by lower dimensional subspaces. And the question is, roughly speaking, what can we say about such sections? Well, if we talk just about individual sections, then probably we cannot say much, because there is a full variety of things like this. So in order to see some regularities and to be able to say something reasonable, we are not really interested in properties of individual sections, but of large sets of sections like this. What large means exactly, I will clarify in a moment. And so we will be identifying some properties which. So just to clarify what I mean by large sections, by large sets and things like this. Now, immediately the first comment. The title says about sections, but in fact I will be talking about projections. And for technical reasons it's much easier somehow. Now, sections and projections are duality, so essentially for the properties of projections we can derive the analogous properties of sections, and incidentally the properties which I will be talking about are self-dual. Okay, so what we mean is I am having this centrally symmetric convex body in Rn. By B2n I denote the Euclidean ball, and the Grassmann manifold of all k-dimensional subspaces is denoted G and nk. We consider the normalized rotation invariant measure on the Grassmann manifold, which I will denote by mu. And so, so what large means and what random means, it really means that when we have a property, when we have some property of k-dimensional norm spaces or k-dimensional convex bodies, so p sub k is some property, and we consider the set of all subspaces E such that the projection, this is orthogonal projection p sub E, it's orthogonal projection on E, and this this projection p sub E of k has this property p sub k. Okay, so I want properties for which a set like this will have a large measure. Now, large may mean that the measure is positive, but in fact, in our cases, it's close to 1 when k goes to infinity. And in fact, it's in all examples which we consider, it has this concentration. So this is what I will refer to when I will be speaking about random. And so the question is, what can be, what random projections of a convex body can be? Well, so my second slide corresponds to the first example of Vitali's talk. But I describe this example slightly different, but everything what is here you already saw before on the first talk. So what this slide says is that random projections of a convex body can be spherical. And namely, they are spherical if we go with the dimension low enough. And so this is, so we have the convex body K and the Euclidean structure as usual. And we define this set this is the set of all subspaces. Sorry. We define, for given K, we look at the set of all subspaces such that orthogonal projections of the body K is a homothetic ellipse. It's a homothetic sphere, because this is a homothet. This is a sphere, the same sphere here and here, with the same radius, some radius. And then it contains a half of the sphere and is contained in twice the sphere. Now, such a set, of course, depends on little k, and the point is that we want to choose the dimension, the largest dimension, little k, such that this set has already reasonably large measure, namely this measure. And this is a different approach, and maybe different from a different side, to the same K-star which Vitaly introduced, and it is the same K-star indeed. And for this particular dimension K star, what we see is that the random projection is almost spherical. There is actually a formula for this K star, namely, this is the mean width, and I wrote the definition exactly the same as Vitaly wrote, but. And the formula for K star is actually here. And this inequality, again, as it was already said, this inequality, this is a two-sided inequality. The left-hand side is, we know it for 30 years plus. This was a theorem proved by Neumann, and this was the form in which Neumann presented the Dvoretsky theorem, and proved Dvoretsky theorem. And, but, however, this inequality was extremely interesting. We were always used to the inequality rather than the formula. And it was extremely interesting when Neumann and Shachtman discovered that actually this, we also have an upper bound of a similar type. So, also in this talk, as in the previous talk, we will talk about asymptotic formulas, which means that essentially these expressions differ by upper and lower bound, differ by a universal constant. Sometimes the constant may be not universal, it means it may depend on some parameters, but definitely does not depend on the dimension. And we look at it when the dimension goes to infinity. Okay, so this is this phase transition dimension, I will refer to it like this, but of course the phase transition is not clear yet from this picture, I mean from this slide. And so the next question is, okay, so the projections, the random projections can be spherical, but what if they are not? What if the dimension, we have the body K, capital K, and what happens if the dimension, little k, is larger than this number? Then the projection is not spherical anymore. Okay, so this is what the subject of my talk is, what kind of properties we can get in such a situation. And the properties which we are interested in is the existence in the projection, the existence, the possibility of a large group of symmetries. Or maybe, to be more precise, we will look at well-bounded operators acting on underlying norm space. And what we will see is, in fact, that we have some kind of dichotomous behavior for the random projections. Namely, if the random projections are not spherical, as it is here, then they already have a very poor, very small group of actually the group of symmetry is trivial. And in fact, if you look at the underlying Banach space, then there are no non-trivial well-bounded operators. I will explain what well-bounded means in the next slide. So anyway, the philosophy of this situation, of this particular situation, is that either something is very, very good because it's already spherical and it has a huge group of symmetry, or otherwise there are essentially no bounded operators. And essentially none means really that identity is always a well-bounded operator with norm 1, but there are no other. Okay, so it's just very quick, few slides of very basic functional analytic notation. So I'm still talking about convex symmetric bodies, but sometimes I also would like to look at Banach space, underlying Banach space. So let me just note that this space E with the unit ball B sub E of K is the quotient space of the original space Rn with the body K. So as a Banach space, it's a quotient space, and this is in fact, this thing is just one of possible realizations of a quotient space. Quotient space really depends on the kernel, does not depend on where does the space live on. But however, this is a, we will adopt this point of view sometimes, that it's a quotient. And here I just reminded the definition of a bounded, of the norm of the operator, just, and, this is a little bit more. Is it better?
Yes.
Okay. So I introduced two distances. A geometric distance, which Vitaly was talking about, is here. This is this distance here. The bodies are called different, but. Maybe I also use different letters. I switch the letters. And for Banach spaces, we identify spaces which are isometric, which one is the image under isomorphism of another one, and hence we introduce the Banach-Mazur distance between isomorphic spaces as the infimum of the norm of operator T times norm of the operator T inverse over all T which are isomorphic. So, in particular, a Banach space, let's say, it's isometric to the Euclidean space if the ball is an ellipsoid. It does not have to be sphere. It does not have to be the Euclidean ball. So this is somehow the difference between the Banach-Mazur distance and geometric distance. It's just, as usual, one should give a warning that this thing is called a distance, but in fact it's multiplicative. So this is a multiplicative distance rather than additive. Now, I remind here the concept of the ellipsoid of minimal volume, which is in convexity Lerner's ellipsoid. So if we have any convex body B, there exists an ellipsoid, the ellipsoid actually unique for this purpose, which is containing the body, and it has the minimal volume, and it can be proved that that the body contains 1 over square root of n times the ellipsoid. And hence, it follows from this that the Banach-Mazur distance of any n-dimensional space to the Euclidean space is square root of n, and hence immediately we get the following trivial assumptions, estimates, and these estimates really already set up the scene for what does it mean that something is well-bounded or not well-bounded. So first of all, any two n-dimensional space are in the Banach-Mazur distance less than or equal to n, and this is because of the submultiplicativity, because we can go always through a Hilbert space. The distance of one space to a Hilbert space is root of n. From Hilbert space to the other space is another root of n, so we multiply, we get n. And this distance, we will remember that it is obtained by going through a Hilbert space, which is something like the triangle inequality. So by this trivial triangle inequality, we get n. Another case which I would like to consider is that if I have n-dimensional space, then on such a space I can always define a projection of rank, let's say, n-half, which has a norm less than or equal square root of n. And we do it again by going to a Hilbert space and finding, well, in Hilbert space we have many projections, orthogonal projections, for example. And going back to the space, we get a trivial bound square root of n. So, square root of n tells us we can always do this. And in the next slides you will see that there are cases that we cannot do anything better. So this is the trivial bound. For the Banach mass of distance is n, and for projections is square root of n. Okay, and I would like to show some examples. There was a question in connection with the first in connection with the Banach mass of distance between arbitrary spaces. I mean, this is a trivial bound, and there was a question open for a long time whether one can actually decrease what's really the diameter of the set of all n-dimensional spaces. And it was solved by Guskin in 1980, who showed that the diameter of two spaces, of the diameter of the set of all dimensional spaces is of the order n, asymptotically when n goes to infinity. So this means that the trivial bound, which is over there, which goes through a Hilbert space, is actually cannot be improved in general. Now, why I am bringing this example, and why did I also call this slide n-dimensional quotients of L1-3n? Well, okay, so this is the description of Guskin's example. This is, in fact, a random example in the following sense. So I will describe how the bodies look like. So there are two bodies such that the Banach mass of distance between them will be of this order. And the bodies are of the following form. We take in Rn, we take the unit vectors, the standard unit vectors E1 up to En, and then we take randomly chosen vectors x1 up to x, say, 2n. So xi's are independent, uniformly distributed on the sphere. And then we take the, well, we take the convex hull, symmetrized convex hull of all z's. And we take, with a large measure, two copies of B omega. So let's say, as I wrote here, that I consider the set of omega omega prime, and for omega omega prime I look at the Banach mass of distance, and with large measure this distance is in fact larger than or equal to n. With the large measure is like this. Okay. So this was the first example of this type, and it was really a breakthrough example which turned out quickly that spaces like this, which we refer to as Guskin spaces, then spaces like this have other extremal properties. So the point here is that the Banach mass of distance, which is trivially obtained by going through a Hilbert space, here is actually cannot be improved. I mean, just going through a Hilbert space. Okay, another result which was obtained by Guskin and by Sharak independently about 2 years later or something, says that the same spaces, the same bodies, have also the extremal behavior for the second property here. Namely, that in these bodies, so as we said, for every n-dimensional space there exists a half-dimensional projection with this bound for the norm. And the second result, Sharak-Guskin result, says that on these particular bodies, every projection has the extremal norm. Every projection of a rank proportional. Now I am writing rank n half, and I am writing this twiddle because if n is not an even integer, then I mean, people may feel uneasy somehow about it. This is asymptotic theory, and everything works for ranks, let's say, between 1/4 and 3/4, something of this sort. And again, this is with a large probability. Okay, so these spaces, the Ruskin spaces, are actually quotients of L1. I mean, this is not the same representation of quotients as I showed on the slide before, but it is also a quotient of L1. So this means that some kind of random argument here shows that random quotients in certain sense, but this is not the sense which I was talking about before. However, there is some randomness. Okay. One more thing about this example. So there were further various theorems about the Ruskin spaces, or spaces like Ruskin, because for other properties, maybe some more delicate constructions had to be made, but the constructions would be of the same type. So I'm not claiming it's always exactly the same construction, but there is so much flexibility in this construction that you understand, I think, what I mean. And so these spaces have very few well-bounded operators. So what this precise statement says is that there are no projections, that all projections have an extremal bound, in fact, have an extremal norm. But in fact, what was proved by Sharap a couple of years later is that, well, something of the following. So this is not a terribly precise statement. That if we have on such a space, if we have an operator which has a relatively small norm, and now relatively small means not extremal, it means smaller than some delta times square root of n, if you want to think of square root of n divided by log n or whatever, something of this sort. So if we have an operator which has a norm a little bit better than the extremal one, then such an operator is already of the form multiple of identity plus something, and this something is essentially very, very small on a large dimensional subspace. So I should say again that
it's not the same lambda.
Oh.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, okay, so make it C or something. Yeah, this is not the same lambda. This is just a scalar which I don't control, and of course scalar times identity has a norm one on every bound space. So the point is that on these spaces it's clear that we don't really control the norms of operators on small dimensional subspaces. I mean, on the proportional dimensional subspaces we control the behavior, and we see that the behavior is extremal. But on a smaller dimensional subspaces, I mean, for example, if I had a subspace of dimension fourth root, then my bounds, trivial bounds, would be eighth root, and eighth root does not compare to the extremal case. So that's why. That's why this theorem can only control the operators on proportional subspaces and nothing below. So in fact, this is another thing which I should mention here, that in these examples controlled things on proportional dimensional subspaces, but nothing on a smaller dimension. Okay, now, the point of these examples was that still all the examples which I just showed you now were quotients of a specific space, namely of the space L1. And however, the method in general can be generalized, and it was introduced, I mean, the general method was introduced by Bourdin in the connection with the homogeneous space problem, finite dimensional homogeneous space problem. I won't really discuss it, so I leave it on the board. on the transparency for some time. So I think I have to say one word in spite of my intentions. So the question asked by Niemann and solved by Gauguin was that if we have a convex body such that for some given k, all k-dimensional sections are well isomorphic, whether the space is well isomorphic to a Hilbert space. And the meaning of well and so on is written here. So Gauguin proved this for dimensions less than or equal some fixed proportion of n. But it was, let's say, couldn't go out above a half of n. And then Mankiewicz and myself proved this for all dimensions with the appropriate formulation. Now, this theorem introduced these random projections. Or maybe some random techniques of some form in acting on general Banach spaces, on general bodies, rather than on the quotients of L1. Okay, so I would like to state that I would like now to concentrate on some theorems which Piotr Mankiewicz and I proved quite recently, and these are the assumptions of the theorem. Essentially, I need to say a few words about them before I state the theorem. So now, all this what I said I need to when I consider the convex body in Rn in the situation that the Euclidean ball is the ellipsoid of minimal volume. Now, every convex body has an ellipsoid of minimal volume, and if this ellipsoid is actual ellipsoid, not the Euclidean ball, then we can do the affine transformation to bring the body and to bring the ellipsoid to be the Euclidean ball and we change the shape of the we take the different position of the body k. So after taking a different, what we call a position of the body k, we can always assume that the Euclidean ball is in fact the ellipsoid of maximal volume. Minimal volume. In fact, I don't need all this, really. The only thing which we really need, which is satisfied by the ellipsoid of minimal volume, is the fact that such an ellipsoid has a large number of contact points. So contact points of the ellipsoid and the body are just points which lie both on the body and the ellipsoid. Where I am saying ellipsoid, now it's both. And for the ellipsoid of minimal volume, we have at least capital N, as many as dimension of points like this. But in fact, I don't need all of them. I need just
the
proportion.
So the bounded.
Yes. Okay. Bounded of K and E2. Now it's gone. Yes. Okay.
No. Bounded of D2 or D2 as well.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, well, it's better more than too few. Okay, what we need about these contact points, so these are points on the boundary of K and B2. So that the norm coming from K and the Euclidean norm both are equal to 1. And the thing about these contact points is that in certain orthonormal bases, they can be organized in the form of the triangular matrix with the large diagonal. this is what is written here. This is the only property of the set of minimal volume which I will need. Okay. So, now is the big test because I have few transparencies which will come one on the top of another. And I wonder whether I will be able to do it and how many mistakes do I have here. All right. So this is my assumption, and I will put it there. So this is the assumption on which I am working, and now I have some constants, lambda and epsilon, and there exists. Yes, this is abuse of notation, but I have a tendency to say there exists a constant C. Now this thing, this C, depends on lambda and epsilon, but the reason why I'm saying constant is it does not depend on the dimension. So forgive me if I say a constant. Such that for every dimension, we have the following situation. Okay, so we are looking now at the Banach-Mazur distance. We are looking now at random projections at the Banach-Mazur distance of random projections of the body K. I write this in the integral form that I am integrating over the Grassmann manifold, but in fact the statements are true point-wise with a large measure. But it's just more convenient somehow to write in the integral form. So we would like to say that the random projections of K are in a sense as far as possible. Okay, so we would like to estimate this thing from below. And this is the estimate. Don't pay attention to these brackets yet. So this is the estimate that random projections, Banach-Mazur distance between two random projections of the body K is larger than or equal to the distance, average distance. This is the geometric distance of the body to the sphere. So in other words, sorry, my voice is... does not want to cooperate.
It's
very helpful. We are organized. It's not as necessary. So, the sense of this estimate will become clear in a moment when I will write an upper bound, which is a trivial upper bound. The upper bound is the Banach-Mazur distance between two, that the average Banach-Mazur distance between projections is less than or equal, of course, it's less than or equal the Euclidean distance, the average Euclidean distance of each projection squared. I mean, this is just the triangle inequality. And this is, of course, less than this. So, on one hand, this is the estimate, which is the trivial triangle inequality. On the other hand, I have a lower estimate of exactly the same type of invariant, with one little bit of cheating here, because here we consider a smaller dimension.
Because you're missing a square on the square.
Okay, on the very top should be also a square.
Under the integral.
Here should be also a square. If the random projections are spherical, then this is the end of the story. Then we already came to the phase transition dimension. If they are not spherical, then these things, we think of these things as going to infinity. And this invariant between the values of these two invariants for n and n half, essentially n half of the dimension, we have our Banach-Mazur distance. So in other words, this Banach-Mazur distance, roughly speaking, is as large as it can be, given the distances, given the spherical or not spherical projections. Okay, now this is very unusual. In fact, this phenomenon is very unusual for convexity or Banach space, definitely in Banach space theory. And let me just trivial example. I mean, if I had, for example, the space L1, I wrote the definition of the ball, and I take let's say coordinate projections, any two coordinate projections are isometric to L1. And hence any two coordinate projections are isometric. So the Banach-Mazur distance between them is one. But the Euclidean distance is square root of n. So things may be very close together in spite of being far from being Euclidean. But of course, this example is not a random example. So what I am saying is that the random example is as bad as it can be. It's extreme. Actually, I wrote transparency for this, which says more or less this thing, that the random distance is as large, okay, roughly speaking, is as large as possible. This is not quite exactly correct because of the drop of dimension, but if we agree to drop the dimension, then this is, in fact, lower bound as well. And now, so what we have is some kind of asymptotic formula again, that the same type of invariant bounds from above and below. The invariant is not exactly the same, but there is this drop of dimension which is necessary. There are examples on which it is necessary. However, this is still sufficient to do some kind of a possible. It suggests that some kind of a possible stabilization is possible. Now, the fact is that this space, this function, is very badly Lipschitz. I mean, there is nothing like reasonable Lipschitz constant here on the space of on the appropriate Desmond manifold. So there is a possibility, and in fact, I will show in a few slides. There is a possibility of some kind of, maybe not exactly concentration, but prescribing certain range, natural range for this function with a large probability, in spite of the fact that we have absolutely no Lipschitz constant or anything like that. So this is an interesting consequence of the fact that we actually have a formula. That we actually have two-sided estimate. Okay. So, there is some room here, and of course I left it for purpose. Maybe I am talking here about distances, but before I also said something about the results that Gooskin spaces did not contain. The Gooskin spaces were very rigid in the sense that there were essentially no well-bounded operators. And we have a similar result here now, which is a very recent result. So actually exactly the same formulation, and now is without squares, is true also for this other invariant. So what this formula says is that a typical a random projection of K on the Grassmann manifold. This is now, if I consider this as a Banach space, this space does not have well-bounded operators. All well-bounded operators are essentially multiple identities. And again, what well-bounded means, I mean, this invariant A is determined essentially within some range by the geometric distance to the Euclidean space. So this thing here is a counterpart of the other result of Buskin-Sharrett, which I mentioned before. One more thing. So let me go back to this first result about Banach-Mazur distance, and let me now go to the I have one more which I wanted to put on. The theorem is proved in two steps, which are essentially independent steps. Namely, we introduce certain volumetric invariant, which I will put in a moment. We introduce some volumetric invariant, W, and we prove two theorems. One theorem is that the Banach-Mazur distance is larger than or equal to this expression with the volumetric invariant, and the other theorem is that the volumetric invariant is larger than or equal to the geometric distance. So there is this additional volumetric invariant, and whatever I said about stabilization also concerns here, and I would like now to talk a little bit about this volumetric invariant. A little bit needs probably 2-3 minutes, right? Do I have still? So, the definition of the volumetric invariant is here. It's quite complicated, but roughly speaking, we compare the volume of the Euclidean ball sitting outside the body with the volume of the body itself. But it's not as simple as that. We have to take some infimum and supremum of these things. But roughly speaking, as I said, it's comparison of volumes. Now, how does this invariant look like for ellipsoids, for example? If I have an ellipsoid with the semi-axis lambda I, then the volume, I mean, if I just had the comparison of volumes, then this is just a product of axis. But my volumetric invariant looks like this, that if I have K and L here, then I am taking the axis organized in the decreasing order, the first K of them, largest K of them, and go back by L. So this is the formula here for the volumetric invariant for the ellipsoids. Now, this is very interesting. That this is actually, and it is needed in the proof, that this volumetric invariant has a definite geometric meaning also in terms of axis of an ellipsoid for a general body. So, for the general body, what I also wrote here, I'm starting to rush in and what I also wrote to here is that we can check this volumetric invariant on the spaces M1, and it turns out that our theorem recovers, of course, Buskin and Sharrett and other theorems. Okay. So, for a general body, this volumetric invariant corresponds exactly to the axis of the M-ellipsoid of the body. Now, M-ellipsoid of the body is defined here, and this is another contact point with Vitalistok. M-ellipsoid is defined here by means of, this is an ellipsoid, which, if it is normalized in such a way that the volumes of the body and the volume of the ellipsoids are the same, then we can cover, for example, the body by the ellipsoid by the exponential number, but exponential in n of points. This is the covering number and so on. Now, very interesting thing, which is non-trivial, is that such an ellipsoid exists for every body. And for every convex symmetric body, there exists an ellipsoid with this property. And then if we take this ellipsoid, then it has the following other remarkable properties, namely that with respect to the volumes, Minkowski sums of the body, intersections of the body, and the same for polars, the ellipsoid acts more or less the same as the body itself. So in particular, in our case, our volumetric invariant is exactly equal, I mean, not exactly equal, sorry, is proportional, is equivalent to the volumetric invariant of the M ellipsoid, and this is extremely important. So, just one more word about the M ellipsoid. So this ellipsoid really reflects for the n-dimensional body, this ellipsoid really reflects the volumetric properties of the body and the dual body at the same time. So, in particular, it was introduced in the context of what we call the inverse Brun-Minkowski theorem, which the theorem proved by Vitali in 1996. And in fact, Vitali mentioned that all other theorems in Banach space theory proved from mid of 80s to mid 90s or things can be reconstructed now by using this ellipsoid. So this really contains all the information about on the proportional level of the body, and we are also using it in a very strong way. And so I am afraid that I have to finish. Thank you.
Quick question.
And then there was the dimension of the small space. Is there any technical reason for having data with the dimension of the large space or that's the answer?
Yeah. No, I mean,
so some of the things for sure hold with large dimension.
Yeah, but you can't.
Okay, we start again in 5 minutes.